Hello and welcome to You Missed It! This is Andrew. I'm here with Zach,
yeah.
Ryland, Jack, and to my left, Alex. Today, actually, before I get started, I just wanted to do a quick get Jack to give a quick reminder of where you can find us on social media.
Yes, if you want to find us and listen to us talk for an hour or even more, you know, car rides. These are what we're here for. You can find us on Twitter at YMI_podcast. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, and SoundCloud. Like and share and get us out there, folks.
Get learnt during your workout routine.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jack, for that. You've fulfilled your purpose. You can leave now.
Okay. Bye, Andrew.
Okay. Bye.
Fuck you.
He's off to the moon.
So today we watched Moon, which was my pick for this week. It's directed by Duncan Jones. It was actually his debut film. So he had done nothing before this. But since he's done Source Code, if you remember that from... that was the one with Jake Gyllenhaal and the train.
I saw that in theaters. That movie's pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it. His film after that was Warcraft, which I have not seen.
See, that's what I was thinking. I was like, is this the Warcraft guy?
Because this is the Warcraft
guy. I forgot he did Source Code.
But I didn't watch Warcraft. So,
neither did I.
You know, nothing's been tainted. It's starring quite a few different people in like, background roles and whatnot, but the main actors in this one is starring Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey's voice.
It's just Sam Rockwell and Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, we should basically say Sam Rockwell and Sam Rockwell. I picked this film before recent news events, but basically this film, Kevin Spacey doesn't play a big role. This is a Sam Rockwell movie.
Yeah.
He carries the film.
He really does.
Yep.
So... I'll put that out there. I'm not ignorant to the news. So moving on, though, the budget for this film was it was actually a pretty modest budget for what it was, because it's a space movie. It was $5 million. It was made for $5 million, and it did make a turn of profit at the end. It made $9.8 million, just under 10. So it made back its budget and then some. It's not like a huge amount, though. Basically, the Cole's notes, the plot, it's the film follows this character, Sam Bell. That's Sam Rockwell's character. He's a man who experiences a personal crisis once he gets close to the end of his 3-year contract, which he's on the moon doing mining for 3 years, and the end of his contract, he gets to go back to Earth. So that's the basic premise of it. This film was actually featured as part of a lecture series with NASA. So it was actually praised by the scientific community for getting a lot of the things accurately portrayed. The director, actually, I just found this out. I didn't actually know this. He's planning to make a spiritual successor to this film called Mute. That was supposed to come out this year and distributed by Netflix, but it's actually coming out next year. Still by Netflix. Yeah. And he actually intends to make a trilogy within this universe. That I didn't know prior to this, his intentions moving forward, but it's just an interesting little tidbit. I think it's underrated just because Sam Rockwell's performance, like, not a lot of people have seen it. I feel like every time I mention this, like, everybody's seen, they got on the space kick, especially the last few years, but everybody's seen like The Martian, Interstellar, Gravity. Like, those are the big ones, especially like a movie like Gravity, where it was all Sandra Bullock. It was all one character, but that had been done so well in this film prior to that film coming out way back 2009. Cause I think Gravity came out like 13 or something.
Yeah. It was 2013. And also it's a very different movie too.
They are very different, but like a space focused one man show.
Basically. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Like one actor's show. But he never got nominated for that role. So, no recognition that year. So I felt like it deserved a little bit more recognition and more people to see it, just because it was a really good film. It is on par with a lot of those better space movies, you know, and it does things like people really dug The Martian. Actually, Martian would be a good comparison. But I like this better than The Martian personally.
Yeah.
So it, it, it's a really great film, and I'm really curious what you guys thought about it. So let's just dive straight into it, and I'll go to my left and start with Alex.
This film really threw me for a loop. Like, watching it, I really liked it. I definitely think it's underrated because I had not heard of it. I knew of Sam Rockwell. I had never heard of the director. And I really loved the visuals in the film. And the tone of it, yeah, it does fit with a space movie, especially when it's one guy in space and it's got that isolation feel to it. And then when the clone part emerged, that's what really not only threw me off, but it got me even more interested. So I'm glad you picked this film. I think it was a really good pick. Like, definitely underrated, absolutely. And Sam Rockwell, I had seen him in a bunch of other things, so I was familiar with who he was.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think, aside from a film that I saw him do with Anna Kendrick recently, I don't think I've ever seen him as the...
What did he do with Anna Kendrick?
I can't remember the name of the film, but it's a comedy and it's pretty good because he does a great job.
What?
I won't remember the name until 3 weeks from now, but if you look it up on the internets, you'll find it.
The Internet Movie Database?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you want to plug that, that's fine. I didn't know if we were allowed to do that, but...
Or Jack's Mailbox, where you can mail him letters.
Oh, yeah, that too. You'll answer your questions, this, guys.
No.
Why are we going back? We don't need to bring back the doxing Jack gag.
I want to say
no, that's a recurring gag. It never ends.
Send emails. Don't send me physical letters. Save the trees.
Send mystery packages with no names or return addresses on them.
Yeah. Perfect.
So Sam Rockwell.
Yes.
I knew of him. Pretty good. And he can carry a film. I think with this, it does prove that he can carry a film by himself.
Yeah.
Great definitely. Choice for a lead role. And yeah, like, it's underrated. I liked it. It threw me for a loop. It kept me interested. It was entertaining. I probably have to see it. And I've said this about other films that we've watched. I'd probably have to see it a few more times to see what else the director was getting at, not just in terms of story, but in terms of like little hidden things.
Because
I've heard other directors say, if I wanted to send a message, I'd use a telegram, you know?
Okay.
Like when they put little hidden things in there, like little images or
there are
references
little
to something
tiny
else.
Cues in that film that I do notice on repeat viewing, that it's like, foreshadowed it here, something I didn't notice, they left something here. Like there are moments in that film as well where I did notice that. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, especially where it has like a midway twist like that.
Yep.
So yeah, I definitely I guess we'll move on to Jack. What did you think of the film?
Before I get into my opinion, the movie you're looking for is Mr. Right.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mr. Right? I still don't know what that is.
I've never heard of this either, but the only other name I kind of recognize in terms of creative is the writer Max Landis.
Max Landis, yeah. It's John Landis' son, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of his scripts. It was in hell for a while, and then it finally came out. It was like written years ago, and then it just...
It had an $8 million budget, only made like $300,000.
Yeah.
So it did blip. But I've only heard of this movie just through Zach, and I've seen that poster many times. And I've always been aware of it, but I had no idea what it was about. I knew it was like a low budget, Sam Rockwell movie. But after seeing it, it was like, yeah, this was pretty good. I enjoyed it. Alex was saying, it did kept me guessing of, at first I'm like, oh, is this just going to be like he's going crazy? Is it more psychological? But then it's like, oh no, it gets a little more philosophical with like what it means to be human, human rights and all that. Even at the end where he's like, hey, we're not things, we're not programs, we're people, before he walks away. It was just really, I'm just at a marveling just how good this movie looks on a $5 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do with, if you know how to use money right and you spend it well, this movie, I think this will last longer.
When you got to think of the actors that were in it for 2009.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like pre-success for these actors, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's probably why not a lot of people, is why it is underrated, because Sam Rockwell wasn't big, or at least he wasn't as well-known as he is now.
Yeah.
Like, if this came out around the same time as, say, Seven Psychopaths or anything like that, this probably would have done a little bit more business.
Maybe.
Just a little bit, because he was starting to become a little more known, yeah. Right? More familiar with people, at least for me, because I didn't know who Sam Rockwell was until he got his little push a couple of years back, at least mainstream push. You guys were talking about like little things that you could find hidden messages, and one of the things I found, which I'm so happy it did last throughout the entire movie, which was when you first see Sam Rockwell and he's wearing a t-shirt, what does the t-shirt say? It says, "Wake me up when it's quitting time."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, write that down. That's going to come back. And it was pretty much almost the whole theme of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was right there. So, I thought this was a really standout performance for Sam Rockwell. I thought the special effects, again, given the budget, were very good, very commendable. I can definitely, like, you can tell it's a cheaper movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At points. Yeah. But it doesn't take away from it. It doesn't look cheap. It just looks really nice. You know, all the moon shots, the mix of, I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably a mix of miniatures with some green screen all that. But it was done really well. And I think more movies should be made like this on this kind of budget for these kind of stories made. It shows that you don't need $100 million or you don't need to do what Gravity did, which is CGI everything.
Yeah.
Right. And I think this movie will, in the grand scheme of things, could actually age better than Gravity, because Gravity will start looking dated within 5-6 years from now, whereas Moon still looks solid. Mm-hmm. And this is almost eight years ago.
Yeah, 8 years.
So, yeah, no, that's my initial sum up. So, yeah.
That's good. Rylan?
This movie was excellent. I hadn't heard of it before until I heard you guys talking about it, but... And it's definitely in my wheelhouse. I love space movies. I love survival/isolation type movies. I love anything that is like a mind bender type of thing. So this is like totally my type of thing. I thought it was excellent. I loved the psychological aspects that it played with. I love just the look and feel of the film. Sets, particularly the outdoor shots, like the moonscapes, were very atmospheric, and that was complemented beautifully by the score, I thought. Yeah. Just kind of create just kind of a moody, somber, lonely tone kind of through the whole thing. Felt it really elevated it. I loved the attention to detail in the set dressing. Like, I loved how he'd kind of turned his sleeping quarters into like a little dorm room. And little touches like the fuzzy dice on inside the moon rover are just really cute. Mostly the main element of the story is about the fact that the character finds out he's a clone, and he is certainly not the only one. But what I liked about it is that it's so easy for plot elements like that to just feel cheap and forced in. So it's like, okay, well, we had a premise, but it's not really long enough to fill out a full feature-length runtime, so let's, like, throw something in there. But it didn't feel like that at all. Like, the way they introduced that twist in the first place was really clever, because we have our main character waking up in the infirmary, and then... this is about, what, like a third of the way through the movie or so. And then he goes and finds another person in a crash rover who turns out to be himself, or rather the character that we'd been seeing up until that point. So the Sam that we are suddenly reintroduced to was, he finds another Sam who's actually the first Sam, but who's actually not the first Sam at all, because he's neither the first nor the last.
We were... like,
yeah, he's the first one that we saw, but he is definitely not the first.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing about the 3-year contract for these workers is that the clones simply have a 3-year lifespan. Kind of think a bit of the replicants in Blade Runner there, except with even even shorter end of the stick there. They get a year less, don't they?
Yeah.
No, it definitely comes across like, yeah, I think the 3 year, I wrote that the 3 year plan is, yeah, no, their actual lifespan, you know, I don't think they're supposed to live that long.
Yeah. I thought that was a given. Yeah. Like they pretty much like the whole, his degradation and him flipping through and seeing everybody else go through that. It was, mm-hmm.
And they all look like in complete terrible shape. Just,
yeah,
it seems to be a very quick,
Well, you know, I will say this about that aspect of the film is that I do think it is a bit strange that you would have your clones go on for 3 years when their lifespan is 3 years. You figure you as a company, especially a company that needs to assess risk, that you would make it so that you have a buffer, like a safety. So that if their lifespan was 3 years, you would make their contract 2.5 years or 2 years even. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like you try to maximize it, but you keep that buffer so he doesn't, I don't know, crash a rover into big expensive machinery, you know, like because he's losing it. So that part kind of gets me thinking
the company's whole like strategy about like using like clones for labor and giving them like, you know, memories and like souls and, you know, all that. I mean, you can argue the practicality of that in the bigger picture, but it does make for an interesting story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess, Zach, you're the only other one besides myself who had seen it. Yes. So, what did you think? I guess, has anything changed? And what did you think originally?
Well, it's hard to say because I saw it. I was lucky enough to see it in theaters, which was actually really cool, especially with a film like this, you know, the isolation and stuff in a big, you know, dark theater. It kind of really adds to it, right?
And those big landscaping shots, too.
And I remember, like, just kind of, like, the feeling of the film, I guess, is more of what I took away. Like, because funny enough, like, watching the movie, I completely forgot about the clone thing. Like, I remember the insane stuff. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's right.
I was going to say, that was, and like, then the central, like, premise.
And then it's like, oh, boom. Like, oh, I told you. I forgot the plot and everything. It's been so long. But yeah, it's a damn sexy movie. I mean, you know, from the visuals to, music. You know, the twist, the music I love.
Yeah. Like in a theater, that music, like having it cranked, like that's awesome.
It was a real treat for sure. And, I think Sam Rockwell's performance is really good. The fact that, like, kind of like what Jack was saying with the budget and what they did with it, with like the set deck and stuff, is pretty damn impressive as well.
Just to give you a comparison, that movie cost $5 million and the most recent Boo Medea 2 cost $25 million.
That's right.
Yeah, but how?
Right. Well, Boo 2's got it going on, you know.
It's got a lot to live up to with the first one.
That's right.
The first one cost $20 million. It's just $45 million spent on those two movies compared to Moon,
They could have made 8 Moon sequels.
There could be 8.
Moon 9. That's all. They just throw a number. It's spacey, you know. Moon 9. That sounds like a space movie. Take place on a different
from
moon.
Outer space.
There you go.
From Moon 9 is what it's going to be. Actually,
you know, I'm really curious how this next, like, if since he's making the second, like, another film, like a spiritual successor, I'm kind of curious how that pans out. Because
Is it just like kind of going into more details about this company that's making clones and not telling anyone about it?
That would be the logical like continuation of this, of, oh, this event rocked the world in this way.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say the only thing I didn't, that it's a bit of a nitpick, the only thing I didn't care for was the last 10 seconds of the movie.
The radio stuff.
I was like, you didn't need that. I thought that was a bit tacked on.
But maybe that's leading to the sequel.
I don't know. It was like, oh, we blew the lid off this thing. Like,
yeah, but the whole thing, it dropped so many themes and ideas within 10 seconds that could have been saved for another movie. I think that's what he meant.
Well, they might have been like kind of teasing those ideas, because playing with the like media and ethical and social fallout from something like this could be a foundation for the next movie.
But to sum that all up in 10 seconds and then the movie's over, I felt that was a bit,
it was a clever way to do it, because it was just radio chatter. It wasn't like them, like,
I didn't go on and on.
Yeah, it didn't go on. It was just some people like reacting.
I see what you mean because it does kind of, if you think about it, it does bring up a lot at the last minute. But at this point, like, the movie is over. I was saying, you can write a whole other movie about that part. And I kind of felt like it's there to for you to consider the implications at the end, as opposed to try and explain them to you.
That's what I mean. I didn't think he needed it at all. I think he just could have had him just going off to Earth and just kept it ambiguous.
I don't think so. Cause like we're all like the way I look at it is like you had different reactions, right? I appreciated that. Like you had the guy who just says, this guy's full of shit. He's not a clone. Like all the stuff he's saying, he's probably just an immigrant and we need to deport him or lock him up or whatever. Right?
Yeah, just stuff
that
like,
one hick guy saying that stuff. And you're like, that's totally, you know, people would say that.
No. I'm not saying that like having it there, like what, like the reasoning for having it there is just, if you're going to bring that up, don't just pile it in the last 10 seconds of your movie.
And it's also a fast and simple way to let us know that he got back okay without having a dramatic reunite with the land scene.
Yeah. I didn't want that either. I didn't. I thought, again, it was just the audio. I thought the visual was
you didn't
fine.
Want Gravity Man. I don't want to see Sandra Bullock get out of the life, ship, man.
Oh, God, that was the worst one. Don't see That's life right. in people. Life is terrible.
I liked it more than Jack, but still.
Stop complaining about the tiny things. Well, I don't know. Like, it's just, I didn't feel like it took away from
I did say it was a nitpick, so. Yeah. But, because there's very little to say anything wrong about this movie. You know, there's one part we'll never talk about again just because idiots.
Yeah. You know what? To talk about that character, like the robot, though.
Yeah, Gertie.
As a character, Gertie. I dug the emoji thing.
Oh, yeah. Emojis! Yeah, that was so ahead of its time.
Yeah, right. Well, no, I don't know. 2009 emojis were
no. not enough to make an emoji movie like we did now. Like emojis are huge.
No,
now.
It wasn't quite as. But you got to keep in mind that the emojis on that on Gertie were like smiling, frowning, concerned, and or like confused or hiding something.
Yeah,
right?
And crying.
One crying. Yeah, which was actually
I love
really
that.
Yeah. good, because like you're like it's a stupid crying emoji, but you're like, yeah, this is sad. And it's like, but you know, like I love that about that character. I thought that added so much personality to the character, just because. It's a robotic way to add emotion to a robot.
It's one of the most out of all these movies where we've seen the AI, but that has a lot of personality and characteristics with Hal or whomever.
Yeah.
Who's that robot from Interstellar as well?
Yeah.
This was probably the most realistic I have seen. What I mean is like, I can see humans building that in like a year. Now,
yeah, it doesn't seem far-fetched.
No, it seems like this actually could be. Well, you know, the only times it gets a little far-fetched is when it becomes obviously we haven't created full AI where they can where they can make decisions on their own, rebooting and making those decisions. We haven't gotten there yet, but how the robot moves on its arm and all that, I was like, this whole set looks very realistic. Like this is something that I could believe is being built right now. So that's one of the best things about the movie, how I think helps keep it grounded and realistic.
I think the director was at NASA actually, like around the time it came out, and so a lot of the community, like a lot of the workers there, scientific community that was there, they were talking about, you know, the film and everything, and they asked him, oh, why did you put like cement foundation? That kind of thing, right? Because typically when you'll see like structures on the moon and things like that, it's not cement. So that's not what they're using. They don't have cement floors. But he's like, well, at that point, I figure we would use resources like on the moon to create permanent structures. Like we'd evolve into that. And then one of the people like apparently raised their hand. They're like, actually, that's what I'm working on right now. It's like moon cement. I forgot the literal name for it, but it's like moon cement. Sure. It's like, that's literally what I'm working on right now. So that's why I think they kind of liked it. Like that community really liked it, just because they were like, oh, this is kind of neat. This is like, this isn't far-fetched. This isn't overly far-fetched. This is like a narrative, like it's obviously taking creative leaps in some places, but it's like really grounded as well.
And actually the whole idea about finding a source of energy on the moon is that's also not far-fetched
at all. Well, exactly.
Like, actually, what they were saying, I was like, I've heard this before about this type of gas, or, like, helium gas.
H3, they called it?
Yeah,
H3.
H3.
And how, like, if they were able, if it's more, like, powerful than, like, anything on Earth.
Well, except we don't have any reliable way to farm that stuff. So, like, it's different.
We haven't been to the moon since the 70s.
So there's their creative leaps, but, like, at the same time, grounded in the real, right?
Yes.
In real life, which is important for films like this. That's why Interstellar is successful, or The Martian can be successful, because, like, it feels real in a way that you can appreciate.
Yeah, and actually, I should also mention Alien as well. There's definitely, like, the first, like, 10 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, like, this is almost kind of like a non-horror Alien in a way.
Yeah, hugely influenced with the set deck and all that. For sure, yeah.
Especially with, like, a low budget and all.
Yeah. You guys, by the way, I don't know if you guys all know, but you know that this director is David Bowie's son, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
You didn't know that. That's why I thought you were going to drop the factoid in the beginning. Is that, oh, Duncan Jones.
I thought you knew that, like,
yeah,
like his other films. I
did know that too.
He was making another movie based off of this.
Yeah, I did know that too, but yeah, it's David Bowie's son.
Yeah, I knew about that.
Yeah.
No, no references to Ziggy Stardust or Major Tom or anything
that.
It would have been way too easy.
He's like space. Yeah,
it's probably his dad was just like, son, don't.
Yeah, too obvious. Yeah,
I'll die earlier.
Low hanging fruit.
Yeah. Wow. Can I just say that can we just all agree that Clint Mansell, the composer, like the most underrated composer out there right now?
He's excellent.
Because I have yet to hear a shitty score by him.
Yeah, Requiem for a Dream.
Well, Requiem is the most iconic.
That's my favorite.
Well, it's used in like everything. Lux Eterna is like in every trailer ever.
Yeah. So dramatic.
But then also you got Black Swan, and that music is one of my favorites. Even the score from Noah was really solid.
Yeah. So basically just Aronofsky's movie.
Yeah, he's done mostly just Aronofsky films.
His boy.
So it's nice seeing him do other films that are not just Aronofsky, and this score I thought was really, really good. It's like
the man knows how to use the strings.
He did not do Saw.
Who did Saw again?
That was somebody else, not him though.
Oh, okay. I can't remember
the guy who did Saw.
I can look that up.
But he's looking at
we live in an age where everyone has the internet in their pockets, guys. Like,
this can be answered.
Yes.
I was going to say, he's not looking it up on his phone because this is a podcast. He's using the power of his giant manly brain.
Thank you.
Because no one can see him.
Yeah. Sure. It's a video podcast. We'll go with that. Keep the illusion going.
Yeah. Not yet. But no, he didn't do what was the one you
saw?
Saw.
No, that was...
Who was it? Because it's someone...
It is someone who you recognize, and the name's just at the tip of my tongue too. Charlie.
Clouser. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
He did the Saw theme,
but still, Clint, pretty good.
Yeah. No, he's. Yeah. I was just looking. He did the most recent Ghost in the Shell with. As a score, but yeah, no, he's mostly done Aronofsky films, but all of them have been, at least the ones I've heard, have been just amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. And extremely memorable. Nothing like. You would hear just like most scores today, like especially in big budget movies, you know, there hasn't been a very memorable score in a long time. Like you used to, in the 80s and 90s and even the 70s, every big movie, they had an iconic score that you still listen to. And nowadays, just like, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. It's almost an afterthought.
Yeah. And most composers nowadays, I don't think are really, striving for that, or at least they're too bounded by what the standards are for music.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm very happy with certain movies coming out nowadays, but like more of a synth score, they're changing it up a little bit.
I was going to say, right? Like, as a prime example of that, like we were talking earlier about the new Thor movie, right?
Yeah.
That had a really like 80s, like synthy score. Mm-hmm. That was felt really like fresh. You know, it was like a callback, but like I'd say like Interstellar is a really good example. Like Hans Zimmer does a good job of varying his style.
Hans
Zimmer is my favorite. Interstellar is my favorite score.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love
it's
like
incredible.
The organ and everything. It's so awesome.
Oh yeah, no, there are
cool.
The exceptions, and Hans Zimmer and Clint Mansell and a few others are definitely leading the way. But most scores nowadays, like they just a lot of them sound the same. They're all really sticking to what John Williams did.
Yeah,
and even John Williams' scores, like, lately haven't, you know,
they haven't been as up to par.
No, so you're just thinking maybe there needs to be a full shift, and I think people like Hans Zimmer and all that have been leading that way.
They can adapt to different.
And I think it'll definitely, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's true. One thing I will say about the film as well, see how you guys thought, but I thought, like, so the first clone, the first one, version of Sam that we see, is his degradation, like his body degrading, and how that process throughout the film, I thought was extremely well done personally.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it just looked like it made me uncomfortable regularly watching him, like, just fall apart. Like, what did you guys think about that? Did it like register with you? I saw you, Alex, you were still like eating. when he was throwing up teeth and blood, and like
I actually thought about going for some chips then,
and
then
I was like, really?
Well, it just depends on how, like, how you are with like stuff your tolerance. Like that.
Yeah, but that for me, it was making me feel uneasy because I'm like, teeth, and he's fishing in his own blood in the toilet. Gross, man.
But man, it's that fiction wall, yo. It's like,
I guess so.
Man, it's all fiction.
That's, it was pretty unnerving though. To watch, because it's just like, okay, I'm not sure who all's like getting home here, but this guy ain't.
Yeah, no, he's not going.
No, man,
anywhere.
They're gonna give him the cure. He's gonna get the
cure. He's gonna get the clone cure.
They're gonna go. Like, yeah, they're gonna go to Earth.
He's gonna become a real
Orphan
boy.
Black. That's Orphan Black spinoff. That's what we're gonna get. Orphan Moon. There you go.
Orphan Moon. Yeah.
Orphan Moon.
Bell.
Orphan Bell. Yeah. Project Project Bell.
Oh yeah. My God.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So like.
So. So I'll say something about the eating while he's spitting up in the toilet. When I watched Cannibal Holocaust,
I wouldn't have been able to eat anything during Cannibal Holocaust.
And I'll tell you about that. When I first watched that, it was the turtle disembowelment scene. At that particular time, I was eating black beans and dry curd cottage cheese. And for some reason, it didn't affect me. I was really into the movie, just like I was really into this movie, but it didn't affect me for some strange reason.
Yikes.
So there's that.
What are you actually eating?
I can't tell you.
All right.
Human flesh.
Or else toilet green is people.
Ever since that movie, I can't stop.
Actually, that was the one thing that I was just wondering. I was like, what do they do with the dead bodies? I'm like, do they just feed them through those little packages? I was like, are they making all cannibals?
No. They have puppet shows.
Oh, that's
worse. They string them up, and they have, like, Michael Jackson performances. It's great.
A Sam Rockwell quartet of just
corpses. And, like, the more lively ones and stuff they'll have, like, for different ones. And then they'll have, like, the skeletons or, like, the background dancers.
Oh, the really decomposed ones.
Yeah.
You're talking about the bodies of the...
All the dead clones. Like, what?
Well, you didn't notice
they get
that?
Well, they get zapped and all, but where did all the goo went? Because I saw
they don't zap them. They do what you do with bodies right now.
Oh, so they cremate them.
They cremated them. Oh, okay. And that's what that was dust.
Yeah, that's
that was
ash.
Oh, that was
that's
dust.
Yeah,
oh,
that was ash.
I didn't know that was
so
ash.
So basically, that's why you saw, like, there was that part where they showed the flash and they showed the machine connecting to the side and, like, vacuuming it up.
Right.
And then you could just, like, put that out into the vacuum of space. Big deal.
Okay. Yeah,
it's
whatever.
Ash.
Yeah. I missed, for some reason, I thought it was, like, not dust, but just like,
yeah, no, it's ash. It's like the ray, which makes sense. You would, if you cremate people in real life, you would probably do the same thing with clones.
Mm-hmm. I do like my puppet show version better though.
I like how Zach didn't want to correct you. He just wanted to just go with it.
Yeah.
I like how in Zach's mind, like, they can harvest natural resources from the moon, but they can't put together a holographic show.
They have to use, these
they got to do a real puppets. Real performance. Yeah. It's all about the real, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But it was nice seeing, you can like that whole stuff with him watching like old clips of like, his wife or his daughter and all them, like, Nolan, did you see some of this shit?
I was thinking the same thing too. I was like, oh yeah, and then it's like the daughter's older later and it's like,
I was like,
didn't have that crying scene though. That's now like one of the biggest memes.
Matthew McConaughey crying scene.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
a
pretty great one though.
Yeah. Well, Matthew McConaughey pretty much is a living meme, so I mean it's kind of inevitable.
He is. Yeah, ever since he said all right
and
he's
Lincoln
forever.
The Lincoln
ads, my God. Yeah, that guy just, I don't know what it is about him. Yeah. But yeah, actually, that's a good point, because that scene was really impactful, like the phone call scene.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you guys a question. So you heard her saying, "Dad, somebody's on the phone."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it does sound like Sam Rockwell.
It was Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. So you got to think that's the original guy.
That is that. That's what they did. They cloned off of him.
So that's what I think would be a great interest of a sequel, is like you have the original one, an older one, like, and then you have him coming back.
But the vibe I got wasn't that the clones wanted, like, yeah, they did say, "I want to see them," because they still have those memories.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get the vibe that they actually wanted to go take over the life.
No,
like,
the vibe I got,
he's like, "Go to Hawaii, bring me back. I always wanted to travel. Bring me back a pina colada," that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think he just wants to live out his 3-year lifespan
the way
he wants to, yeah, right? Just, on his own terms.
They want to go home now that they know. And I like how, like, the only thing they blew up was the live feed stuff, which will cause shit.
Jammer.
Yeah. But the smart idea of, like, you know, wake up a clone and just basically let things kind of go back to status quo to an extent.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that's, you don't see that too much in movies. That's not the easy route to take with a story. It's actually a bit hard to, because you could just say, oh, just blow everything up and it'll be a big spectacle for the audience to see everything go to shit. But to see him make smart, responsible choices, adult choices.
It wouldn't have worked anyway.
Can you even have fire on the moon? There's no oxygen.
No, you can't have fire in space.
No. Yeah. Well, you can inflame inside, but the second it gets out into space, it's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah. In space, you can't.
Yeah. So it wouldn't be much of a spectacle anyway.
Yeah. Actually, it's just kind of a funny thing I remembered about that. But just before that, like, he took remember, they established early on, they said, oh, it takes 3 days to get back to Earth. It's a 3-day journey. So if he had not reset everything and made everything seem normal, 3 days later, because we already know they have live communication.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they just say, hey, check that coming in.
Yeah.
Like, they'll be waiting for him and he'd be toast. Like, it never would have gotten out. He needed that to make it seem like everything was okay so that he could survive.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So it was smart that way. Like, there was no way he could have, like, just blown it all up.
Yeah, because they wanted to get that kid.
No, and it would have been a selfish decision too, because what he's doing, it is actually helping the world. So it's not like he was being screwed over or anything like that.
Well, yeah, it's essential to life on Earth at that time as well. So he'd be like impacting the daughter that he has memories of too,
exactly, right? So that's why I'm very happy that they didn't do a stupid agreed ending. They did a very, like, a smart, well thought out, actually, it was really well handled, and why I think, again, this movie I think will last a bit longer, because it's not about survival, it's not about destruction, it's not very simple-minded like that. It actually asks a lot of questions, it keeps you interested. And I will say, the other thing about the in terms of, we keep talking about the special effects, or like with the moon shots and all that, actually it was the split screen stuff with him working off of Sam Rockwell, working off himself, that shit was insane. Just seeing them, like, playing ping pong with each other, going back and forth, and them crossing the, you know, what, making a high five and all that, and it looks seamless. Nothing really, that part was more impressive than the outside space shots for their budget. Like, that shit was really well executed.
Orphan Black was taking notes.
I was just about to say, like, that's, you want to get your mind blown, that whole show, like, does that, but then adds
except
five
add
of them
more
in
clones
room
than just
and
two.
It's crazy, like, as an editor on that show, I'd lose my mind. Like, it would be insane.
Yeah. Well, they always have, had a tendency of having set pieces at the end of every season, or Black.
Where they all come in.
Where they would have, like a dumb, crazy, a crazy clone sequence, and then everybody would be, like, they always wanted to one-up themselves on what they could do.
Yeah.
Which was crazy, because you'll watch these things and you'll be like, how did you even accomplish?
Yeah, and she plays, like, 10 different characters
and
stuff.
Insane.
It's
That's an underrated show. We're never going to get into underrated shows, but people should really check out Orphan Black.
Very, very good.
So underrated.
So underrated.
Yeah.
And, isn't it over now?
It's over now, finished. So you can watch the whole thing. Yeah. But they are talking about maybe doing spinoffs of the movies, hence the whole, you know, Orphan Moon. They could do it.
Sam Rockwell, Tatiana Maslany, Orphan
Moon.
Do it.
This time they could just be friends. You know, no
That's
rivalry.
Right. They're like, oh, you're a clone too? No way.
That they'll go that route instead.
I did like that too. There was no evil clone. They stayed, their personality was the exact same. Again, they avoided cliches like that.
Yeah.
There's no bullshit.
I dug that too, because, like, they all, it made me realize that they all have the same arc, that they planned for them to all have this same 3-year arc where they come in and they have a temper. They have this, like, he has this temper, and that over time he starts to control his own temper and his how he reacts, right? You look at later Sam Rockwell and you see that his character is calm, you know, collected, not reactionary, right? But the other one's a hothead, right? The one who just came out is a hothead. And then you realize the subtle little things. They say like, yeah, she left me. I said I needed to change. And then, you know, I did change. And she's, you know, going to give me a second chance, right? Mm. It seems odd, like they orchestrated his own emotional maturity. Like they just orchestrate that by making... Because these videos are obviously all pre-recorded, just shown to every new clone, right? So they pretty much set this up every time, where which is... was super compelling to me, where they're just like, yeah, we were gonna make her do this big thing so that you can make an effort to be better, so that you'll work better and you'll be, you know, you won't be angry at things, you won't break things, like you'll be able to have better self-control, because I'm guessing the original was a hothead that way and they needed a way to fix that.
Yeah,
and that's their solution to that.
Mm-hmm. No, it's good that like
it's elaborate, but you know.
Yeah, and to go further upon it, like yeah, again, there was like no evil clone, but there's also no villain really at all in this movie.
The villain's a corporation.
Right? Yeah,
but they're not really portrayed as antagonistic. They're not like the evil bad guy. They're just a corporation doing their job, and that's all. There wasn't an evil HAL computer or nothing like that. There was no gimmicky.
They did play with that.
With
Gertie, right?
That's to say, they played with it, but they
even had the eye, right?
Yeah,
and you're like, he's an evil robot, and
when he's talking with the live feed behind their back and all that, because you don't know. That's before the clone thing was really revealed.
Yeah,
and I do like that it wasn't held up as a twist. Like they could have played out the whole movie, is he losing his mind?
It was just another clone. Plot point.
It was just another plot point, and they didn't hold on to the story gimmicks, and character gimmicks. And I like how they didn't show any other actor besides just the live feed, even though they're far away in the distance and their video feed and they're blurry.
They're in a boardroom.
You don't and even the video feeds, like those are the only other humans you see. So when
besides the wife, right?
Yeah, yeah. I thought I mentioned that too. But
the
when
wife and the kid,
when the rescue comes, you don't see them at all.
No,
They played it very much kind of like with Dunkirk, how you never see the enemy.
Yeah,
you never see the Nazis in that movie. You don't see a face. It's or like Duel. It's just you know, that detached of humanity. I think really helps isolate the character,
especially for a space movie.
Especially,
I think it works really well. Yeah. Mm.
Well, you feel isolated with them. That's the feeling. I think they did a good job of getting you to feel that way.
Yeah.
Because, you don't feel like you know any other character either. You think it's like you're just talking to yourself. You're just experiencing this one character. So it's kind
of
neat.
And that whole vibe works with the idea of kind of a corporate villain, as it were, too. Because typically... It's they don't act out of like malice or antagonism. It's essentially out of indifference for the little guy and in pursuit of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And so he's
just a cog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you kind of get that feeling that like he's not really important and he's just on his own.
Yeah.
That's why, with regards to Lunar, the corporation, they're not putting all their eggs in one basket. Like just sending up one guy, that's why they made the clones, so that if something happens to him, well then there's someone, him again, the clone, to take over.
Yeah,
because
you always know that there's somebody qualified working available to work.
Yeah,
that, and you're never gonna have staffing issues.
And that mission alone, that costs billions of dollars. If you watch Aliens, the beginning scenes of Aliens, they talk about how blowing up that ship costs billions of dollars. So they're learning from that in a way. Lunar is learning from the mistakes made in Alien, that you never put all your eggs in one basket. You always have a backup plan. And you see that in a few movies where humanity gets kind of lost or left behind. Like people, it's like Sam Rockwell's character's last line to Gertie, were people.
Yeah.
So yeah, never forget about the people aspect. But sometimes, in the grand scheme of things, you have to look at the bigger picture, and sometimes people get left behind, so the humanity gets left behind.
Yeah.
And then with regards to clones, the cloning thing really reminded me of The Sixth Day with Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yeah.
So then there's that philosophical thing of it's a clone, the memories are implanted, just like with Blade Runner, the replicants, and the memories are implanted. So are they really human or not? But then that brings up Dark City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you remember that film, that's such a great film.
A very underrated movie.
Yeah. If you have enough of someone's memory, does that make you human or can you become that person?
I mean, we are constantly having that, like, Blade Runner talk, like, deals with that a lot, dealt with that a lot. Just it doesn't even have to be an organic clone. It could be like a synthetic. It could be something that's completely machine. But if it has, you know, what threshold do you need to pass in order for it to be considered like alive in a way?
Another movie,
or it's own organic being.
Yeah, another movie that I haven't seen this yet, but it deals with a lot of the similar themes as Solaris.
Oh, yeah, I forget the director's name, but yeah, it was like 1960. Tarkovsky, yeah. And then, of course, the George Clooney.
Oh,
the remake of George Clooney.
Who directed that again?
It was Soderbergh, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. But the original is really good. It's a classic space movie.
Yeah. No, I just recently saw a Renegade cut of that. I was like, oh, yeah, the same thing. By the way, I do want to give a shout out to Renegade Cut for advertising our show on one of his recent videos.
Nice.
Old Boy. You can see our little banner on there. So thank you so much, Mr. Leon Thompson.
Yes, thank you very much, man.
Yeah,
thank you, man.
You make good videos.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just wanted to...
Yeah. No, of course. But yeah, all these films you're mentioning, they do deal with that. It is a common theme in film to, you know, what is humanity or what makes you, what is life, right? So it's interesting. I like the way they handled it here, where it was just the clones felt distinct, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool too. It's like, it's so easy to think of clones as carbon copies of each. They are carbon copies of each other, but being in every way, personality, the way that they their mannerisms, everything, but they were totally different. The mannerisms were different, their personalities were different, their demeanor was different. It was kind of interesting to see that just across the two clones, right? And you had a third one waking up. Who knows if he's like maybe a little bit different?
Well, and to play more with your point on, you know, kind of the nature of humanity, how it's like it's possible for it to be synthetic as well. Like we kind of see a little bit of that in the robot character, the Gertie, because multiple times in the movie, his desire to help has overridden what he's been programmed / commanded to do.
Yeah.
And like if, you know, overcoming, you know, your own programming, be it like physical programming in a computer's case or like social programming for people, like that's like being able to make that distinction and make that choice, like that implies independent conscience.
They never completely say that he has fail safes or not. So I wonder, like, I'm not sure. Does he have, like, it would be smart if you would have fail safes that say, hey, you can never do this, or you can never, you know, what, like, just to cover their themselves. But again, I think we've established that they're not really good at that.
Yeah,
like,
I noticed
this 3-year lifespan and all this. Like, they don't care about fail safes, clearly.
No.
But, you know, they did kind of establish that. Gertie's primary function was to help Sam.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the
and help is such a vague term. Well, so he kind of used that to his advantage.
Yeah, he used it.
He can make these leaps in logic of, well, I can do this because I'm helping a Sam.
Well, exactly. It's the whole, it's the notion of AI in general, artificial intelligence, what's one of the hallmarks of intelligence, the ability to learn. And that's exactly what this robot has done. It learns above different it learns about human emotions and situations and dilemmas and all that, and it learns to make choices based on the conditions that it's been exposed to, which probably much of it probably wouldn't have been accounted for by its initial programming, because we've established that it was programmed by people who don't give a shit about other people. So this robot has learned, basically, learned on its own how to be a better person than the people who made it.
Because it's hung out with another person and, like, bonded with Sam over multiple generations of himself for who knows how long, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And like that, even had, you're right. It even had that moment, that crying moment we talked about earlier, where like, yeah, he has a cry emoji, which means that the robot, the artificial intelligence, is actually sad about this, like seeing him react to this. He's feeling empathy, right? Or sympathy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, yeah. It wants to help Sam, but it can't. So it's sad. And
yeah, he's like, I have sympathy for you because I know this is hard for you. And which is not something a robot should do.
Exactly, yeah. It's so simple to describe it, but for for basically a computer to come up with that is something that's unheard of in
currently.
Yeah. But who knows?
But it's still kind of crazy. If you go down the rabbit hole, you can find some pretty
seen the was it Saudi Arabia just gave citizenship to a robot?
I didn't see that. Oh, I was more focused on the driver's licenses.
I didn't hear about the robot. I just heard of all the other shit.
Yeah, the driver's license, right? Yeah, that was the big story the last couple months.
Well, no, the last so big, like they just put out like a huge like sweeping anti-corrupt like measure in the Middle East, and everyone's just getting like caught or like arrested or something like that. Mm-hmm. A Saudi prince just died in a helicopter crash yesterday or something like that. Like, it's crazy going on right there.
Probably that helicopter from Injustice for All.
Yeah, those aren't safe. Those aren't safe. We know those aren't safe.
Cheap-ass helicopters.
Yeah.
Those were a thing.
I can't get over it.
I'm going to put you in one of these days.
You will never get me in one.
It looks like the Batman helicopter.
It is.
Totally.
It is.
No, he has too much money to have a helicopter.
Yeah, it looks like
about
as real as the shark repellent bat spray.
Yeah, I was going to say, there needs to be a few cans of that aboard. Never leave home without it.
Damn straight.
Well, yeah, you're going to end up in the water. I mean, shit. Like,
that's right. You don't know where sharks are at, man. They could, you know, Jaws got me scared, man. I don't know. Doesn't have to be the ocean. Could be a lake. I don't know.
Could be SeaWorld.
Could be SeaWorld, man.
Could be the James Bond villain.
Jaws 3D.
Sharks can get anywhere. I don't know.
Yeah.
Could be the Bond villain.
Have you seen Jaws 3D?
Jaws 3D?
Yeah.
No.
It takes place in SeaWorld.
Yeah, it does.
Does it actually?
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Oh, okay. I was just being an asshole.
No, I'm not bullshitting. The whole plot is the big 35-foot mama shark gets into SeaWorld.
Oh, that's stupid.
It is pretty dumb.
God damn it. Whatever. They've ruined a lot of movies, so you know,
revolutionary special effects.
So this was not one. Hopefully he doesn't. Hopefully Mute does not ruin this film.
Hopefully you don't want to put it on Mute.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what the next installment is going to be.
Yeah, I'm curious. And it's on Netflix, so it's going to be really easy to, because I think they said they're going to have a limited run in theaters, but it'll be like typical Netflix release cycle where they'll simultaneously release it on both. Do a limited theater run, but have it on their platform, obviously.
So like Oakja or something,
Oakja, yeah, kind of like that. They're doing the same thing with Bright, that Will Smith one that's coming out. Bright, like a little random, but like, isn't Bright made by same guy who did End of Watch?
I feel
David
like
Ayers.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Right? David Ayers, yeah, who also did Suicide.
It kind of looks like a dude.
God damn it.
His movies have cops in it.
Yeah. That's true.
So that's why I'm excited for that, because it's really good.
End of Watch is really good.
Actually,
though.
I don't know. That's... Suicide Squad, I guess technically it has cops, but really?
It's got the army and all that shit. Yeah. Like his.
Wasn't Viola Davis's character cop?
It's not
it's got either the army or cops. Basically, people with guns.
Yeah.
Because you look at. There was that tank movie he did with Brad Pitt.
That was really good. Really good movie.
There is that and a couple other things. I'm just curious, like, with is Sam Rockwell in the sequel?
I didn't see that, so I don't know. That would be interesting, because Sam Rockwell's in. That's funny.
Oh, that was good.
So if Sam Rockwell's in the next one, then we're sure that it's continuing that story.
Yeah.
Right? But it says spiritual successor, so I have a feeling like maybe the character like will be infamous for the event, but I think it's going to follow something completely different. That's what I think. I should really check that.
I think if there's a new clone, it should be Ram Sockwell. That should be the name.
What? Ram Sockwell?
I'm sorry, folks.
Are you bored?
I was coming up with the potential movie.
Well,
let me
just quickly fact check that.
Yeah, what I was wondering though is that it's called Mute, right?
Oh, it's called.
So we have like the.
So interesting. I'll just. So Sam Rockwell is still Sam Bell, but he's not top bill. So my guess is it's like I said, where you'll see pictures of him and whatnot, or it'll have like flashbacks.
They go back
and
to the moon.
But the main actor is a completely different character. It's Alexander Skarsgård, actually, from True Blood.
Oh, okay. Right?
So you have him as a completely different character who we haven't seen. Obviously, Paul Rudd's in it. Justin Theroux. Yeah, and then there's a few others outside of that. There's a bunch of characters in this one.
So really, the exact opposite.
Yeah, it's like a space. No, a lot of these look like secondary characters. Like the only ones who have, like, there might be this one. Like, there's one that looks like it's a robot name, and then the other ones don't have names yet. It looks like kind of similar. It's going to be small cast, actually, because if you look at the total cast, it's about the same size as this one.
Yeah.
But this one, they were counting like the board members in the back and this and that. They were crediting people who like really weren't a part of the movie.
Yeah.
The older and the younger, you know, version of his daughter, right?
So, I will say, you gotta love, like, it's amazing how like how dated those title cards now look in the I will say that, like, the intro credits for the like After Effects, clearly.
Oh, for sure, they're angled.
Yeah,
and
I'm just like, oh, this did not.
Yeah,
age
they're
well.
they're attempting to match the background planes with the angle of the text, and it just looks it looks very slapped on.
You can tell if you look.
I was fine with it.
I'm just wondering.
Oh, it's not. It's a very
nitpicky. It is nitpicky,
you know?
But it's very. It's very 2000s.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. It's not a knock against it. It's just an observation. You know, just one of those things. Like, that's funny.
At least it's not the transitions that we saw in Battlefield Earth.
Oh man, I would have loved that. Give me some of that Windows movie. Thing. Yeah, the Windows Movie Maker transitions. Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Perfect.
I will say their transitions were very like fade out, fade in, fade out, fade in.
We should insert an audio clip of Andrew reacting to those transitions from Battlefield Earth.
Which one?
Yeah, right?
Well, they were stupid as hell.
They were stupid as hell. They're like, oh my god. We have video proof.
Yeah,
from years ago.
You're so bad. Whatever. I don't know. For you, I think your favorite viewing. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you, Zach. I've seen a bunch of movies with you over the years.
Yeah.
Which film is your favorite reaction from me in terms of like how much I just was not having a good time?
Oh, Inside, obviously.
Inside.
Okay. It has.
I wasn't
Inside.
Even there. I only heard you, and it was amazing.
Yeah, you were outside.
Yeah, I was outside. Wow.
If there's a movie with as many puns as you belt out, like, that's the reaction.
Oh, Kubo. Kubo was the other one that was great. With
Kubo?
With puns, remember? Remember Matthew? It was Matthew McConaughey's character. He was just pun
city. Oh, yeah.
That's... And I was losing it in the theater, and you were just so upset.
Yeah.
It was great.
I don't know, him with Freddy Got Finger was pretty funny too.
Well, that was great on
you
on
with
bunch
Freddy
levels.
Got Finger was the funniest.
I was
though.
Quiet, steaming angry. He was like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, but I actually kind of enjoyed.
Yeah,
it.
But you just
enough.
Got up and left the second it was over. That says that speaks
volumes.
I
do rewatch
right there.
That episode quite.
Me too.
Yeah.
I will say though, since the second movie also starts with the letter M, I'm wondering what the title of the third movie is going to be.
Moo.
Oh wait, there might. Hold on. I think there's an answer to that.
All the Moo. Triple M movies, man.
Moo. Yeah. They just remove a letter each time. That would be Mo. They'll be like, they'll be stranded in Mo's Diner. Although there's no E, I guess, but
Mo's Bar.
Good enough.
Would it just be Mo's?
Or yeah, Mo's. Yeah.
It's Mo's Tavern.
Mo's Tavern. Yeah.
They're going to go opposite with it. You know, in the Die Hard movies, the first one was a tower. The second one was an airport.
Right.
The third one was New York City. Fourth one was across two states. Fifth one was in a different country.
Yeah.
This is going the opposite. So this is going from the moon to Earth. Then it's going to go into the Earth, maybe?
Into the core.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The moon's a prequel to the core.
There you go. Perfect.
Interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, no, there's no... Yeah, they don't say what...
is it a silent film?
What? Yeah.
is this like the Before trilogy where they make a sequel every 9 years and they just kind of pick up with...
Jesus, you might be kind of right on that.
But you never know.
Yeah, so it's like they're saying that it's meant to be serve as an epilogue and that Sam agreed to do a little cameo in the next film.
Oh, okay.
So that's official.
Okay.
And he just says that he hopes to complete a trilogy of films. So obviously he hasn't thought about the title probably.
I know what the title is going to be. So the first one was Moon. Second one was Mute. The third one's going to be Moot. M-O-O-T.
M-O-O-T?
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, I guess that's a, yeah.
Because it's this, the whole movie's just moot at this point.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Wow. So on that note, yeah. I guess we'll just go around the table here, get your final thoughts, and if you actually think it's an underrated film or if people should go see it. So, Alex?
Spoiler, as I said when you first asked me at the beginning of this, yes, it's definitely underrated. Go see it. Sam Rockwell is great. The visuals are great. The story is great. I want to mention, you had talked about the degradation, the physical degradation of the clone, and that immediately brought to mind Christian Bale's character in The Machinist.
Ooh, yeah.
So I haven't seen that.
Yeah, actually.
It's gross.
But I'm aware of how gross Christian Bale gets.
Yeah.
You are a sad individual.
I should see it, yeah. And yes. I also know that he did Batman right after, so people always talk about his body transformation.
Yeah, it's so insane.
Yeah, I've heard of that. So that's good to know. I haven't seen that film yet.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any parallels between Sam Rockwell's character and Christian Bale's character in The Machinist. It was just a little thing I wanted to mention.
Body-wise. Falling apart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So absolutely see it. It's from 2009, but I think, you know, watching it, it definitely holds up. It feels like it could have been made a few years ago. Yeah, it was a small budget, so it was one of those under-the-radar things, but it's still great, absolutely. Thank you for choosing it.
No problem. Yeah. And I didn't know it was his debut film either, so that's kind of neat that you managed to do that.
Or the son of Bowie.
Yeah.
Son of Bowie. Yeah, yeah, that's right. I hope he keeps going. I hope the next one's great, so. What about you, Jack? Final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I definitely think this is very underrated compared to all the other space movies that have come out in recent years, particularly ones where someone is isolated or a group of people are isolated. I think this is actually one of the better ones I've seen, especially this year.
There was another one this year?
Yeah, Life.
Life.
I never saw that.
We did.
What is that movie?
It's central to your life. Oh, you need to watch it.
Is that the one with
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Eddie Murphy.
I love that one.
That's a great one.
Joe Colbert.
Yeah.
And Martin Lawrence.
Did Passengers come out this year?
No.
Came out earlier, end of last year, so 2016.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, I saw Passengers, and I'm like, it wasn't that bad.
No,
it was
Just bad characters. Just
some
terrible.
People liked it.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah,
I thought it was okay.
I thought it was. It was. Yeah.
Okay.
It was. Yeah. It was.
The ending sucked.
Like you're squeaking.
Oh, the ending. I will give you that. We both saw it coming a mile away.
Oh yeah,
and
ending
like,
was.
Did you really do that? Okay.
Yeah. It's just.
But.
Oh, and then I saw Alien
Covenant
earlier, and that was stupid.
I didn't see
too.
That.
It was an ant too. But seeing Moon, it was like, yay, and this was good. But yeah, no, I definitely think it's underrated. Definitely go check it out, especially if you're into like character pieces, you know, dealing with, you know, what it means to be human and, you know, with a little bit of science fiction sprinkled in, as all the best science fiction movies are dealing with talking about our places in the world and we're how humanity shapes out. So yeah, no, definitely go check it out.
All right. Rylan?
I really like how there's another underrated film called Sunshine.
Yeah. That one had a bigger budget though, for sure.
Yeah.
but now Moon, we have its alternative counterpart, which is also definitely an underrated space movie as well. Two completely different movies, by the way. I was just using the Sun Moon dichotomy, okay? But the point is that it would be actually.
Bill. Yeah. I love
it. It'd be a very interesting double bill because they are very different movies, but it would kind of work in a way where it's like one's very kind of isolated and, you know, deliberate pace, and then you have like Sunshine, which is like it's a space movie, and then it kind of turns into a horror movie.
I was gonna say it's a lot scarier
and stuff,
and it's a little more menacing.
It still deals with the like humanity dealing with space on a seemingly realistic setting, like the interiors of the ships, you know, dealing with plant life and all that.
That's a stretch because they have like the sun umbrella. They have like shit like that. So like it's a little more in the science fiction fiction aspect of it.
Both
so
movies have great scores.
This one's a little more grounded in science. I love the Sunshine score. Sunshine's amazing. Yeah.
It's so good.
Like I'm not knocking it. I actually love that movie.
Oh, Sunshine's amazing. I've only seen it the one time a couple years back, but it's still
Danny Boyle's killer when it comes to like the visuals, a score like that, like nailing every aspect of like those aspects of the film, like Sunshine just pulls it off, man.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, so go watch Sunshine and go watch Moon after.
Totally. Good good message. Zach.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of agree with what everybody said here. I mean, you know, it's great. I mean, if you can see it in the theater like I did, obviously that will be a better experience. Obviously it's a very underrated movie, so typically you're not gonna get that chance. But if somehow a theater's playing it, like an art house theater, or they're just like, hey, you know, Sam Rockwell, we haven't seen that boy in a while. Let's throw him up on the screen. You know, then hey, check it out. But yeah, very underrated. It's got great visuals, especially for its budget. Great performance by Sam Rockwell. The fact that he holds the whole thing on his own is pretty impressive. And I think the score is one of the highlights, too, again, to stress that. I think it's really good. And they do kind of go back to it quite often, but it doesn't kind of feel like it's overused. It kind of, you know, feels like it's a foundation almost within the movie, which is kind of nice. Yeah, and I can't wait for a Mute and Ziggy Stardust from Mars as well, so that will be a good treat.
That's right. Yeah, let's go see this before you go see Mute. You know, you got some Ziggy. Time now. It got delayed 2018. You got chance now. Yeah, so who's next week?
It'd be Alex.
You're Have you picked your film?
I sure have.
You sure have. Okay. That's good to know. You know what? Let me ask a quick question. How old is it? How what era? What
1988 is when it was released.
Okay. So that's all I want to know.
So it's older than most of you, I think.
All of us.
A year older than me. Just barely.
It just makes it there. Yeah.
And I'll drop a little hint about it. You were talking about radio at the end of it.
Oh, no.
That's all I'm going to say. Oh. It has to do with radio.
Oh my God! Is it radio?
Are you just
lying about 1988? I know it's not 1988. I thought he's maybe throwing us off, and he's going to show us radio. Because
no,
radio.
Never seen
damn classic. Straight.
That's a classic.
I know.
Movie
maybe
right
he's
there.
Just trying to throw us off the scent. I was thinking, oh, maybe he's going to show
that
us radio.
Movie. Made me want to jump in a shopping cart and just like raise my hands while going down a hill. Like that's what
it's
I took.
Fun
from radio.
For about 5 seconds, and then you realize
you can't
oh,
stop.
Shit, I have to stop. And then when you hit a curve, you go flying. Oh, yeah. I take it from experience. It's not fun.
That's right. So Jackass caused a lot of injuries.
And so did radio.
It's even
and
worse.
Radio. Yeah,
it's
way
worse
to go.
When you are in that buggy and you hit the curb, but you are so tight in the buggy that you go with it. And
yeah,
you
go
fly
forward.
Out. You go with the buggy.
It's bad.
But
yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So, Alex, you're next week. And yeah, if you get a chance, check this out. Might still be on Netflix, so try to you know, hey, actually they probably will, especially if they're releasing the next one. So try to watch them both, and I guess we can mute the episode.